everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. And away we go on a Tuesday, June the 13th, 2023. The Buckmaster Show in our 13th year from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. The radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. Our website for all of our podcasts and live listening, buckmastershow.com. Our telephone live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Terry Bracey is our contributor on the nation's capital. He's our government affairs contributor, Terry Bracey, who has had a unique role in representing Tucson's interests, began with a 10-year stint on the staff of famed Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry was then appointed sub-cabinet position by President Carter, subsequently serving under four presidents of both parties. He is the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm in D.C., Bracey Tucker Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. Terry, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing just fine. Beautiful day here in the nation's capital. Not such a good day down in Florida for downtown.
No, an extraordinary moment as a former president is now under arrest. What are you making of all of this, Terry Bracey?
Well, you know, Bill, you're looking at the greatest political Houdini of all time. But I think that I personally think it's all beginning to catch up with him. He's got a real problem here. Think of it this way. What if you had a daughter who was being stalked by some really bad people, like the U.S. is being stalked? And as a result, you kept secrets about where her house was, her phone number, and so on. And then somebody comes along and decides to just share that, put it out in the public, or not protect it. And as a result, bad things happen. Well, Donald Trump has taken it upon himself to take some of the nation's top secrets and put them in his bathroom in boxes where anybody could see them. And, you know, I could just see, you know, foreign spies giving some folks down there $100, $200, go get this for me. I'm not sure that happened. But it really created the situation where that could happen, and it's a disaster.
Terry, will this be a moment that a Trump-inclined voter will say, that's it, I'm done with this guy, or if the indictment will increase his popularity, as legal charges have in the past?
Well, Bill, you know, there is almost a cult of folks who will defend President Trump no matter what he does and what he did. But I think, you know, many of my friends are Republican, moderate Republicans, regular Republicans, what I thought were Republicans in my era. I think they would love to get Trump out of the way so the Republican Party can restore itself. And there's a lot of talent there. You know, a lot of young members and senators who, you know, could put up a pretty good race. But I think that the time is coming where the Republican Party has had about enough of him. Take, for example, Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, who has gotten into the race for president for the sole purpose of speaking out about Donald Trump. I mean, it's going to be very ugly if Trump decides he's going to stay in there.
Yeah, Christie has been certainly very outspoken on what is going on over the last couple of days. And I think Nikki Haley also has spoken out against the former president. Other than that, the field of candidates pretty much saying, yeah, going along with what Donald Trump is saying, this is one big witch hunt.
Well, that's the party line, but, you know, if you read that indictment, which I did, it's 49 pages long, and you go through the things that he did, anyone who has a fair mind would say, oh, my God, we just can't have that. And I think this is going to wear badly over time. As the indictments become clear, as it becomes clear what the abuses that President Trump has engaged in, I think it's going to slowly turn against him. And I think that maybe they've got some candidates on the Republican side who could step in, like Governor Sununu of New Hampshire, for example, and put on a very credible campaign. But the field right now is what I would consider a very weak field, and it's weak in part because there are no leaders there who will say, here's a man who's creating felonies, but I support him. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Terry Bracey is with us. Terry is our contributor on Washington and governmental affairs. Peggy Noonan, writing in the Saturday column in the Wall Street Journal, had some interesting thoughts, Terry, about American voters turning away from both former President Trump and President Biden. In March, Gallup put the share of independents at 49%, pretty much the same as the two parties put together. Ms. Noonan asks, if Biden and Trump are the nominees, who's to say Americans won't decide on another option? You think a third party is possible, or even if it does go that way, is it going to make much difference, Terry Bracey?
Well, far be it for me to say nothing's impossible. The problem is that for an independent to run a legitimate race, John Anderson did, Ross Perot probably did the best job. Ross Perot, for example, got a significant piece of the vote, but not a single electoral vote. So there's a lot of barriers to independent candidacies, which start, number one, they have to get on the ballot in every state. The parties have ways to do this automatically. An individual would have to get on a ballot in every state. And then you run, and you've got to have a strong enough campaign that you can actually win significant number of electoral votes. And I think if an independent were to play a significant role, win electoral votes, they still have a problem. They will never get to 270. And as a result of that, the election would go to the House of Representatives. And an independent would not have any members of the House. They're all Republicans or Democrats. So the likely case is that an independent, even a strong independent, would fail. But as I say, Bill, I've lived long enough to see a lot of things happen that I didn't think would. And I'm not sure having an independent or somebody new wouldn't be a good idea, but it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, you know, you look, though, at one out of two voters being independent. Trump and Biden really have to win these people over. And as you mentioned, and as we know, President Trump has this very hardcore group following him. But you wonder how many independents are going to follow former President Trump.
I don't think many. I think he's a dangerous character, and it's being proven in a courtroom in Florida. He does have one breakdown there. He's got a judge, Judge Cannon, who is a right-wing Republican and a member of the Federalist Society, and who gave him a huge break on another case that went before her. And she took the position that since he was president of the United States, he really shouldn't be treated like everybody else. So, you know, a judge can do to this case a lot of damage. I mean, a judge could literally end the case.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how it works out.
Or the judge can kick the can down the road, and this thing could be 2 or 3 years or longer before it ever went to a jury, Terry Bracey.
That's right.
All right.
Those things could happen.
All right, Terry, we will look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star, your opinion pieces, any of those pieces on the horizon, my friend.
Well, I've got one in the computer, but I can't quite finish it yet. So I'm working on one.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks, Terry.
Okay, Bill. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Terry Bracey with us on The Buckmaster Show. How about Shelley Fishman, who is coming up with me next in studio Always love it when Shelley gives me a big thumbs up. We've got some really positive things to say about the economy and the markets, and Shell's next, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shell, how are you today?
Oh, I'm very well today, even though it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday, and it's a pretty darn good day on the markets. There was a lot of anticipation about the monthly inflation report. The numbers are in, and they are pretty darn good.
Well, the report beat the estimates.
Mm-hmm.
We were expecting about an annualized rate of 4.5%, down maybe a couple of clicks. We got 4%. We got a 0.2% month over month. They were expecting like 0.4. What we're seeing now is a very, very good excuse for the Fed today and tomorrow to say, well, you know, let's hold off on raising interest rates anymore for a while. So the markets reacted really well, and we saw, you know, we're actually in bull market territory.
Are we really?
Yeah. For the year, not for the year, but for the second half of the year, it's going to be very interesting to watch as the Fed, seemingly consensus right now, is that it will engineer a soft landing. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we could actually have some rate cuts toward the fourth quarter.
This would be the first month. I don't think they've done much pausing. So this is the markets are going to like this if this actually happens this week.
Well, you know, there were some mixed numbers in the inflation numbers. The core inflation rate actually ticked up a little bit. Mm-hmm. There are parts of the inflation report that are very troubling from the perspective of if you're a low-wage earner, food costs are up. Fuel costs are steady, that's okay, but housing costs are up. So
for lower wage earners, still a lot of storm clouds, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We're seeing restaurants hit. Apparently, the people who go to restaurants are either cutting back on what they order or aren't going at all.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is interesting to see, because it's not what you'd expect from the holiday weekends we've seen, but airline travel is down.
Mm.
So the holiday weekends have been good, but if you take a look at the airline travel, which was, you know, pretty okay in the first couple of months of the year, mm-hmm. has now kind of eased off a bit, and airlines are getting a little worried about that. So,
The prices too, and the ticket prices are actually down. I was hearing that from the airline. So maybe people are saying, I just don't have the money right now to do that trip.
Well, and that's, you know, when you're paying 20 or 25% more for groceries.
Right.
Look, if you're in the, you know, top half of the wage earners, mm-hmm. you don't care. You just do it.
Yeah.
But if you're not in that, you know, not making that kind of money, then, you know, paying an extra $20 or $30 or $40 a week in groceries, you know, cuts into your ability to vacate.
So you said that we are starting to enter a bull market territory. Do you have any numbers to back that up?
You know, thank you for asking. So, yeah, what I did is I ran the numbers, and this was at about 11 o'clock this morning. So they're almost what they are now, a little bit less.
We'll check your math here.
If I look at the Dow year to date,
which
2 weeks ago when we looked at these numbers was flat,
we're
now up 12% year to date.
Wow.
Then I looked at what I'm going to call Biden to date.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, from January 20th of 21 to date, and we're at 11%. So the first Biden year was a mess because we were in the middle of the pandemic, but we have recovered everything, and in the 2 years, two and a quarter years that Biden has been president, the Dow is up about 11%. The S&P is up 14% year to date, and Biden to date, 13.7%. The NASDAQ, which had a great year last year, had a miserable year in 21. Great year last year, we're up 25% year to date.
On the NASDAQ?
On the NASDAQ, but only up about 0.6% Biden to date.
Huh.
Because you know, it's hard to remember back in
the
tech heavy NASDAQ
has really showing a big recovery though, right? Now.
Well, it's certainly right this year and last year, but in the first year, it was not. And there is some hesitation on part of investors because the smaller banks that are public typically are listed in the NASDAQ, and they, you know, took a beating the first part of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an investor and you have not panicked, you know, lightened up during 21, during the height of the pandemic, and then eased back in according to the proper allocation of your financial mix, you're doing pretty well. And the economy is doing pretty well. And most economists now are easing off their fears of recession, even a light recession, and thinking, you know, this guy Powell might just engineer this thing.
Yeah, because there had been so much concern about, is this possible to do a soft landing?
Well, and if you can do a soft landing, what effect will it have on unemployment? And so we saw last week that the unemployment numbers are just wonderful. The number of new positions being filled, we were up, 360,000 jobs last month. We're up about 12 million jobs since Biden became president. And so traditional economic thinking is that if you're going to control inflation, one of the things you got to control is employment. And you've got to get companies cutting back on their new hires and propensity to fill vacant positions. But that's not happening. And so even though every month we see, you know, some people saying, well, there's a first indications that, that we might get some slack in new hiring, nevertheless, month after month after month, the employment numbers are good. Consumer purchasing numbers are really good. We see, and these are all on average, Bill. So, you know, again, if you're in the low end of the earnings, you're not sharing in this prosperity necessarily, though certainly the president and some of his policies is trying to fix some of that. But what's really important is you take a look at what's happening year after year after year in our economy. You try to put 1980s economic theory to understand it. It doesn't work. And so what people
It's a hybrid economy. It really is. Since the pandemic.
But it may be the new normal.
It may be, right.
And that's what's so interesting. Because if we can take Keynes and put him aside, you know, and we can take the supply siders and put them aside and take a look at the last, let's say from 1990 through today, and take a look at how we have dealt with deficits, how we've dealt with taxation, and what is reacting to what. In other words, if you take a look at, for instance, the Clinton, the first thing that Clinton did was raise taxes. The prior Bush, H.W. Bush, had raised them a bit as well. The Clinton tax rates, along with, you know, very careful negotiations on spending, gave us 4 years of balanced budgets. First thing Bush does, W does, in 2000, is lower taxes. What do we get? Two recessions during his term. So what we're seeing is the older policies don't seem to be working, but at the same time, we're seeing that the economy can tolerate greater amounts of deficit spending than we thought possible without us creating inflation and without us, you know, creating the kind of harm in the economy that, as you know, as recently as 1970, 1975, we thought was just baked into the physics. But that hasn't been the way it's worked out. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, the Nobel Prizes in the new economics telling us what the new normal is going
to
be.
You know, it's pretty darn hard to have a recession, Shelley Fishman, when you have full employment.
It is very hard to have a recession when you have full employment. It is very hard to have a recession when the month-over-month inflation rate is down in the 3-4% range. So there's just, you know, no way the traditional math kind of works. And what we've seen from the Fed is they reacted a little late. I will grant that they started a little late in beginning to use the one tool they have, which is raising interest for short-term interest rates. But they have applied the old medicine and then scratched their heads as the old medicine didn't seem to be working, except now after almost a year and a half of this, you know, we're seeing not that people aren't buying houses. They are. We're not seeing that people have stopped spending. They're spending. We're not seeing that companies have stopped hiring. They're hiring. And yet the inflation has come down from 9% to 4%. And economists are scratching their heads and saying, this, you know, violates all the laws of nature. I wonder if the laws of nature are as strict as we thought they were.
One storm cloud are the supply chain issues, and we've had some Seattle and L.A. at our docks.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard anything the past couple of days.
Yeah,
I would expect certainly that if the administration were doing something to control that, they'd have made a big fuss over it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, the news cycles is just, you know, dominated by the Trump indictment. But you know, I promise to look into that, and let's get to it next week. If those docks, if those ports shut down, then the supply chain issues will come back on us.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is interesting is the way the Chinese economy has slowed, and the way we've kind of not only been able to stop their 12% growth, and it's cut in half, but beginning to actually see a real limiting reliance on Chinese imports. And we don't know how that's going to play out. I think if the Chinese were smart, they'd join the rest of the world instead of trying to divide it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things going on in world economics that are going to play into how our economy rolls out over the next 2 years.
Including the war on the Eastern Front,
there is
I
that.
Call it, what's
there
going on
that.
With Ukraine. Thanks, Shelley. Always a pleasure. Hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Bill. You too.
Okay.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We really are so delighted to have the support of Green Things. They're such a great business. 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site, and believe me, they've got everything you can imagine for your garden. And one thing they have that is outstanding, along with great plants, are the wonderful sales staff. So knowledgeable. If you want to say, well, I'd like something that will survive the hot summer and do well with the summer rainy season, they will point you in the right direction. Also, they'll point you in the right direction if you want beautiful Mexican Talavera pottery. They have the arm of the business called Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our live line when we do our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of our favorite guests here on the program is Fulbright Scholar Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor and Director of Outreach and German Studies in the Department of the University of Arizona. He has a broad range of research interests. He is what I believe to be a modern-day Renaissance man. His interests cover the history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture from about a 1,000-year period that he specializes in, from about 800 AD to 1800. But he's also involved in contemporary literature, writing poetry and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Knights in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. Dr. Clausen is the editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. His most recent books include Wisdom from the Middle Ages, The Secret in Medieval Literature, Alternative Worlds in the Middle Ages, and Humanities in the 21st Century, The Meaning Relevance of Medieval and Modern Literatures. Professor, how are you? How's your summer going?
Oh, thank you, Bill. I'm so happy to be back here, and it's always a pleasure to allow me to talk with you about really fundamental issues that I think ultimately concerns the community at large.
And you are taking a little bit of a break here. You've been traveling, and then you'll be going, is it to Middlebury College?
Well, first I
did you already do the Middlebury?
No, oh. I toured with students, a study abroad program for 3 weeks or so through six countries. And this was basically really a humanities course, hands-on experience, because what does history really mean if you don't really can put your hands on the stones and look at the buildings and sort of get a sense of what people experienced at that time, including death, you know, and love and all these issues?
And you were traveling, and then you are going to go then to Middlebury College?
Yeah, in about 10 days or so. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I will teach.
Yep. And that is the immersion, true immersion, in German. Everybody's going to speak German when you're around, right?
They have to vow and give an oath that they will, for the next 7 weeks, not speak one word of English.
Oh, my goodness.
It is really a brutal immersion program, but it's really fantastic because it's not simply an immersion, but rather they have many classes. They have teachers, and we have movies, we have programs, concerts every day, and sports, and everything has to be in German. Mm. Or, I mean, you can learn Hebrew, you can learn Arabic, Korean, and Japanese, and other languages. I'm just part of the German language school there.
Humanities, it means, well, what does it mean to you in the 21st century? How has our thinking about humanities changed?
This is a huge question, and we struggle with that all the time. I'm, as the editor-in-chief of the journal Humanities, struggle with that because sometimes we have architects, we have sometimes journalists, sometimes psychologists who try to contribute. And I always like to say it has something to do with narratives, storytelling. In essence, human life is determined by storytelling. We always engage in stories. And as long as there's a narrative, then this is humanities. Hmm. Science works with facts, medicine, facts, data, images. We deal with narratives. And narratives surround us and embed us and give us help to come to terms with all these ineffable aspects that are really hard to come to terms with in life.
Humanities was a cornerstone of higher education even 100, 150 years ago, and we started higher education really in the United States. How has that concept changed in this digital age?
Well, we are very much under sort of siege a little bit, mm-hmm. because the science, the STEM fields, including medicine, of course, are taking more and more of their share. But in essence, here at the University of Arizona, but many, many others, we have this wonderful general education concept. All students, or virtually all students, have to take general education courses, which means if you become, let's say, a lawyer, you need to know something about ethics. If you become a medical doctor, you need to know something about human fear. If you become a scientist, you need to know something about your ethical obligations. So that comes through literary works or other narratives that reflect on the downfalls and the challenges, but also the promises, and give you hope sometimes.
You talked about storytelling. In the medieval times, how important was either sitting around the fire or whatever, telling stories?
Well, they had lots of empty time because their darkness was often the problem. They didn't have electricity. Mm-hmm. But I have a wonderful modern analogy. Let's say you're stranded at the airport. You have suddenly 15 hours to waste and lots of people around you. We all know this anyway.
Yeah,
what are we doing? I mean, most people do this, you know, with their fingers
on
smartphones.
Oh, yeah, they're
terrible.
Doing the texting. They've got their head in the device.
Exactly.
But I think I know where you're going with this. Yes. You want to talk to other travelers, right? About
absolutely. Absolutely. But the real way to handle this empty time is to start talking with each other.
Yes.
And sharing, why are we here? Why are we suffering? What have you experienced? What will I experience? How can we deal with this together? Because it's human destiny, our human existence, and that is social. That means we are together. Those who move to the smartphone, in a way, they move away from that, and it's very dangerous.
And somewhere in that conversation about, well, my flight has been canceled, they've lost my luggage, I'm going on a wonderful European vacation, I have nothing, all my things were in my bag. And somewhere in that conversation, a word will emerge, and the word is fair.
Mm-hmm.
You will hear somebody say, it's just not fair.
Oh,
well, bad things, life can change in an instant.
Absolutely.
Bad news can be on the doorstep before you know it.
Absolutely.
And when it happens, we say, gosh, why me? This is so darn unfair.
Yeah.
Is this whole concept, Professor, of fairness a relatively modern concept?
As far as I know, it was really invented in 19th century England. I can be wrong with that a little bit, but no one else really in philosophy or theology or literature talks about fairness. Fairness by whom? By what? Who hands out the fair part on who is unfair? Whom can I blame? This is all intangible. It means nothing. I constantly struggle with that because I hear this just as you do. Mm-hmm. And I have always to tell people, this does not make sense. What you can do is to be thankful. So, for example, I drove down here, heavy traffic, and nothing happened.
You could have been, as they said, T-boned at an intersection.
Absolutely.
You could have been making a turn to come down here to visit with us on the radio station, and out of the blue, somebody ran a red light or something.
Exactly.
You would be either dead or terribly incapacitated. And again, your life would change forever.
And that life of my wife, my family, and everyone else. So what I like to emphasize, thankfulness. Mm-hmm. I mean, just every day, every morning, looking at a flower, looking at the blue sky, even if it's raining, wonderful, try to be thankful. I mean, that's what literature tells us, and that's what philosophers inform us all the time, because we are dependent. We live in a world, I like to call it contingent, a contingent mm-hmm. world where, as you just described, nothing is stable, nothing can be relied on firmly, except maybe your love for your partner, love for your children, and again, I like to say thankfulness.
So what do we expect when we say it's unfair? What deep down, what kind of answer, Professor, are we thinking we're going to get?
It is an infantile concept. It is a concept that sort of implies there is a father, God Father, a divine power who hands out fairness. And that does not exist. That's not even fair, quote unquote, to God. God does not argue like that.
No.
God, if there is a God, let's just simply assume it for our conversation, then God does not operate like this.
No.
God does not listen to your complaints and says, I deserve to earn that much money. Why don't I get it?
Mm-hmm.
No, things are very different. We do not understand at all the higher values.
Are you talking more about a stoic attitude here of accepting the reality?
In a way, certainly. It's a Neoplatonic attitude, stoic. I very much believe in the philosophy developed by Boethius, 5th century, who faced horrible death and asked himself, why me? And then he begins to realize, philosophy teaches that to him, that all your fortune is simply deception. Everything is an illusion. I mean, I drink this water, but how do I know this water is not poisoned? So, I mean, I just don't know.
No.
So we need just to accept things as they are. I cannot rely on them 100%. And then I need to work with what I got and be thankful. Sorry, I come back to the same phrase, but I think it's so important because we have just a very limited time, but I think we need to understand that things are just given to us. They are contingent. They cannot be relied on as much as we would love to have stability. But that's a childish attitude. Adults need to understand based on their life experiences. You and I, we have lots of life experiences.
Yes.
And we know that bad things can happen, as you just described. That's what an adult does in accepting the decisions responsibly and acts rationally as much as possible.
Now, who was this that you mentioned, both?
Boethius.
Who was that?
He was a major Roman, late Roman statesman. He wrote major philosophical treatises. He was later charged for state treason, completely made up. And so before he was killed, murdered, he wrote a treatise called The Consolation of Philosophy. This is one of the most important.
The Consolation of Philosophy.
So he says, for example, misfortune is the only good thing in life.
What?
Misfortune
is the only good
thing in life.
Why would that be?
Because it's the only time when you face truth. Whenever you are fortunate, my water here, my driving, that's an illusion. We never can rely on it, as you just said.
Yes.
So when it is misfortune, you begin to realize this is my friend, that person I can rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And only then do I understand how much otherwise, fortune is like a wheel that spins me around, and I never know. Only when I'm sort of at the bottom do I know that I have hit rock bottom. And from there, I can build my life again.
So is it safe to say then misfortune does build clarity?
Oh, absolutely. We all know this. We know that we have situations in life that are horrible.
Yeah,
I have had horrible situations in my life. And you know what? Today, I am thankful for them because they changed my life.
Wow.
To the better.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would have been on this arrogant curve in my life, and I would have thought I'm the best of the best. I'm not. I'm just an ordinary human being and I'm liable to make mistakes like everyone else, and thereby gain empathy.
Wow. Interesting way to look at this. Misfortune. All right, Professor Albrecht Clausen, we'll talk some more with you right after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, always makes a great getaway. It's about a three-hour drive, and it is a delightful place to enjoy the outdoors at the Gila National Wilderness. And just north of Silver City is the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. It's a great hike up in that area, and the altitude is just lovely, about 6,000 feet. It's cooler, certainly cooler than Tucson. SouthwestNewMexico.org is their website. Everything you need before you make your trip over to Silver City. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We continue with our conversation. We always like having the fairly recently minted Fulbright Scholar, Professor Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona, and just as I like to refer to him, as a Renaissance man. Just this man is involved with so much, and we've been talking about fairness in life. We've been talking about misfortune. Professor, so if there's no fairness, so you know, here you are saying, oh my gosh, what's happened to me is so unfair. Where is the path then forward, sir?
Well, good that you say path. Our life is like walking through a maze. And we all know mazes are very difficult. We take many times the wrong path. And yet there are ways to go through this. And, there are a lot of aids. There are a lot of people in our life. And if you think, for example, Dante, in his famous Divina Commedia, this man is completely lost, and he ends up in hell inferno. But there's suddenly the aid, an advisor, a guide who takes us through, or him, through this horrible situation from there then to purgatory and then to paradiso ultimately. So that's our life. We are struggling. That is normal. I don't want to reject struggle. This is part of our existence. And fairness, it is sort of mollifying things. That is not the truth. It's like Prozac. Oh, don't worry. No, fairness is a wrong notion. We have to struggle hard and accept the hard as well as the good, the bad and the good. And only once it's more balanced can you really appreciate. When you lose things, for example, only then do you really know how much you needed them or didn't need them.
Mm-hmm. People pay big money to go to these seminars. Gee, how to be happy. Someone's going to do a lecture, and you're going to pay hundreds of dollars, and someone's going to tell you, here is the path to happiness. The path to happiness, Professor, and I think you probably agree with this, is right in your own heart. You don't need someone to tell you.
Yeah, that's true. It really rests in your own heart. But I am a scholar, teacher, advisor as well. And I understand fully that, for example, when I'm working with young people,
sure,
they don't know, or they are really lost in their dreams and no one really has given them advice or direction. So as a teacher working through literary material, you know, that's what we do in the humanities. We're working with narratives and texts or sometimes images or even music, whatever, or movies, for example, and they give us direction. They show us evil, bad cases, and those then allow us to think through the process without maybe necessarily going through the life experience. I like to call literature a lab, a human lab, where we see things in a more traumatic fashion, but thereby in a more clearly designed fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I understand better. You know, it's like in a lab, I don't look just at a rock, but rather I look at gold and nickel and copper and whatever. And so literature, I look at the core of human experience. And that's what we try to bring out and give everyone a sense of direction. So
because in the classics, we're going to see that we're not alone. Somebody's been certainly through what we're going through.
Tragedy has always been part of human existence. And it is something people don't want to face. I don't want to face it either, but it's just part of all of our existence. So it's really important to embrace the good and the bad, and for the fifth time, to be thankful if the tragedy doesn't strike me so hard. In other words, sometimes it's better to lose small things or to suffer in small terms, but then avoid the larger problem, because they are signals, they're warning signs. You know, somebody gets sick. Well, that's good, because the doctor said, we'll check you out. And then the doctor might discover, oh, I should have checked this or checked that.
So
the sickness, or maybe you have toothaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, he likes toothaches. I hate them.
Yeah.
But there are signals.
Yes.
They tell the dentist, oh, you have a deeper problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that is where then literature can help us. It alerts us to small problems, and then suddenly we can see the larger picture.
Do you do gratitude every morning?
Oh, not systematically.
I was just wondering if there's something that you say, I'm thankful for a particular thing, a different thing, maybe every day.
I use nowadays, particularly since COVID-19, my camera.
Okay.
Just simply, the camera is my third eye, mm-hmm, through which I can suddenly see different things and I appreciate them. I mean, let's say the night blooming.
Sirius,
right? And I see some on my way to work every morning. And I always think, oh, wonderful. There's the queen of the night who greets me in a way. So,
always a pleasure, Professor Albrecht Clausen. I hope you have a great rest of your summer. And why don't we reconnect when you're back in Tucson?
Bill, thank you so much for this great opportunity. It's always nice talking with you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the professor and John, engineering and producing our program, I'm Bill Buckmaster. I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the day.